Made possible in part by a grant from Horene's Pianos Plus, your Steinway Piano Showroom in Bloomington. Horene's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos. Focus 580 is made possible in part by a grant from Bodywork Associates, this year celebrating their 22nd anniversary. Bodywork Associates has been providing professional massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982.
Good morning and welcome back to the second hour, Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Producing the show, Harriet Williamson, Travis Stansel, and Jason Croft is at the controls this morning. Well, you know, if you drive around the state of Illinois and you take a look at what's growing out in farm fields that whiz by your car, you would probably get the idea that mostly what is grown in the state is corn and soybeans. At least you're going to see a lot of corn and soybeans. And the fact of the matter is, yeah, here in Illinois, we do grow a lot of corn and soybeans, but that's not the entire story of Illinois agriculture. There are certainly farmers in this state who are interested in doing something a little bit different and having operations that are a little bit more diverse, that don't just simply rely on raising large amounts of corn and beans. This morning, in this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking with Dan Anderson. He helps coordinate the Agroecology Sustainable Agriculture Program at the U of I College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. ACES is the shorthand for that. And he has put together a book, which he titles A Different Field, Innovative Entrepreneurs in Illinois Farming, that profiles a number of farmers and their operations, just kind of a sampling of some of the things that people around the state are doing. Certainly, they're not the only ones, but I think Dan's idea was simply to introduce people to the idea that it is possible that there are different ways of approaching farming. Some of these people are doing, raising organic vegetables, they're raising livestock on grass. There's one guy who, in addition to growing some corn and soybeans, raises and sells pecans. We'll talk maybe a little bit about growing wine grapes, because that's a growing industry here in the state of Illinois. It was once big and maybe will again be. There's even a guy in this book who has some buffalo and is thinking about really getting into raising buffalo. So as we talk, questions are certainly welcome. The number, if you're listening to us here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, so that means if it would be a long-distance call for you, you can use that number and we'll pay for that. That's 800-222-9455. So 333-WILL or 9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, thanks for being here.
Oh, great to be
here.
We
appreciate it. How did you start thinking about doing this, about traveling around, talking to these folks, and then actually wanting to put together a book profiling some of them?
Well, I've known about them for a long time. I've worked in sustainable ag since 1992, and used to do a lot of on-farm research, helped farmers research ideas that they had for doing things differently. And so I've known that they've been there for a long time, but a few years back, the USDA Sustainable Ag Program put out a book just like this. So actually, I stole the idea from them. But it was a nationwide book, except there were no Illinois farmers in that book. And that bugged me because I knew we had lots of people that are doing some interesting things. So got some funding from the Illinois Department of Ag, their Sustainable Ag Program, and spent the summer driving around interviewing farmers.
The sustainable ag is a term that I think we're starting to hear more and more, and there may be other kinds of terms to describe what it is that these folks are doing. And people who are not involved in our agriculture, maybe not really quite sure what that means. And maybe even if you got together a bunch of farmers and you started talking about what that means, well, you might get a bunch of different people having different answers. Yeah. Can you give us a sense of what people do mean when they use a term like that?
Yeah, there are lots of definitions, and people have struggled with the definition for a long time. But any definition of sustainable ag typically includes three different things: an economic aspect. It has to be economically sustainable. And when people say that, they typically mean for farmers. It has to be economically profitable. It has to be socially responsible. And when you talk about the social aspect of sustainability, they usually are referring to rural communities, how our rural communities are suffering, and we need an agriculture that helps support those communities. And then there's the environmental aspect of it, farming in a way that conserves resources like soil and water. So any definition typically contains those three elements, and that's what we talk about. There's a lot of issues in sustainability and sustainable agriculture, but it boils down to those three things.
A number of these people, I think, they think of what they're doing. They use the term organic to apply to what they're doing. And I'm not sure that they're necessarily all of these people are certified as organic operations. But some of them, like, for example, John Peterson, I think their very first guy, the guy who's in Boone County, is not certified organic. But I think he says he's been doing it for a long, long time. Is that a key feature, do you think, in a lot of people who are doing taking this kind of alternative approach to farming?
Sometimes. It's one strategy. It's not the only one. Certified organic is the fastest growing segment of the food industry right now. It's been growing at 20% annually for the last 10 years. And so there's a lot of farmers trying to take advantage of that. They can charge huge premiums, grain farmers or farmers growing other products. And there's a growing demand for that. Even in grocery stores now, you see a section of organic produce. Mm-hmm. But these, not all of these people in the book are organic. They are also taking advantage of another trend, which is towards local food systems, marketing directly to people, food or products, and kind of cutting out the middleman, adding value to it, and reaping more of the profit that way.
Yeah. That, I think, as you say, that's another feature of what some of these people are doing. And it does tie into this sort of growing movement among consumers. I'm not sure how many people we're talking about, but it certainly is significant and growing. People who like the idea of patronizing a producer that is somewhere near them, that they actually have some face-to-face contact with the person. They know who they are. They maybe even can visit the place where the food is produced, you know, and actually have some personal contact and some personal relationship with the person. Now, I would also imagine, though, that for the producer, that is an extra challenge because they are then maybe doing their own marketing, their own sales, their own distribution. There may be some processing, some value-added kind of processing that they're doing that maybe will come back to them in income, but it also is an additional complication that maybe some other farmers don't have.
That's absolutely true. There are basically two strategies now for farmers to make it and to survive. One of them is for the smaller scale guy who doesn't want to get big, and that's what this book is about. The other strategy, of course, is to continue to get larger, more technologically sophisticated, and capture those efficiencies. And we're going to see that continue, grain farming, commodity farming. But these farmers, on a smaller scale, they're capturing another called niche markets to survive, and that's what they need to do. It's not for everybody. Growing the food or the product is the easy part. The other part is finding the consumer, connecting with the consumer. They really have to be people. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them in this book said that when I was interviewing, they said, we just love working with people, and that's what they need. There's a lot of additional skills associated with marketing a product in addition to just growing it.
Yeah. If you look at the size of the operations, there is a lot of variability from those that are having, here again, this first guy here, John Peterson, he's got 100 acres now, and he's raising vegetables and herbs. So maybe that's sort of what you would expect for that kind of scale operation. And then there are people who do have more than 1,000 acres, although some of those people are also growing corn and soybeans, right, in addition to doing some of these sort of alternative things. And I don't know these days what's considered to be small, medium, and large in terms of acreage. But is that for people who are doing this and doing it as a family? This is a family farm. It's a family operation. I mean, some of them may be big, and they're going to have a lot of help and have people working for them. But it's not. These are not big corporate operations. I think of these as being family farms.
Right. But John Peterson there, he runs the largest CSA in the nation delivers a box of food during the summer, during the growing season, to over 1,000 people in Chicago area every week, employs over 20 people during that time. And so a lot of labor demand, and that's the difference. There's a lot of labor. He's providing jobs. He's providing food. He's grossing about $500,000 a year on 100 acres. So it's a lot of potential.
Is it the case that if you're doing these kinds of things, you're say, producing multiple products, you're trying to do a number of different things, is that going to be more labor-intensive than if you were simply, had a lot of acreage and you planted part of it to corn and part of it to beans?
Oh, yeah, much more. Yeah. Much more labor involved with diversifying your operation. But it also reduced the risks because one of the farmers in there, Brockman, Henry Brockman, grows 450 different varieties of over 100 different vegetables, markets through a farmer's market in Chicago primarily, has lots of employees. But, you know, if a few of his crops fail, it's no big deal. If one of your crops fails and you're just corn and beans, that's half your crop is gone. So it reduces risk, increases labor, increases complexity in the management of the system, but it also reduces your risk.
Let me just reintroduce our guest in this part of Focus 580, Dan Anderson. He helps coordinate the Agroecology Sustainable Ag Program in the U of I College of Agricultural Consumer Environmental Sciences and has been working in this area of sustainable ag for quite a few years now, and he has put together this book that we're kind of talking about. It's titled A Different Field, Innovative Entrepreneurs in Illinois Farming, and it profiles a number of people who are doing this kind of thing that we're talking about, looking at alternatives to simply planting large acreage of corn and beans. They are a really interesting bunch of people. As he points out in the book, they're all really hardworking people, and they're trying to do something a little bit different. And his idea, that is Dan's idea, was to maybe by profiling these farmers to inspire some other people to at least think about maybe doing things a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Questions welcome. 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL, or 9455. It seems to me that probably most of these people grew up on farms, and some of them are farming the place where they grew up. So it's not like they were people who decided one day they wanted to be farmers. They're people who are, it's in their families and in their blood, and had been for a long time.
Sure, that's true. And they saw maybe there was historical things that happened in their family, and they said, I've got to do something different if I want to keep farming. And so they explored other avenues. But I think there are a lot of people coming in new to farming, and this is a way to do it. You don't need a whole lot of land. There's still costs involved, of course, and knowledge barriers to overcome. But there are a lot of people out there who say, I want to get back. They kind of have an idealized version of what it would be like to live in the country, and they want to get into farming. This is the kind of thing that they end up trying to do.
Mm-hmm. What percentage of all the farms in Illinois would you consider to be alternative sustainable? Doing the kind of things that these people are doing, I would expect it probably be a fairly small percent.
It is very small. I have no idea a percentage, but I'm sure it's very small. It's just not the norm. I think it's growing though. I've seen some research lately. It shows that smaller-scale farmers are growing. The number of them are growing. Super large-scale farms are growing. The number of them, and the farmers that we're losing are the ones that are in the middle. And when I say big and little and middle, I mean that we're getting into thousands of acres for the large farmers. Mm-hmm. The smallest farmer I worked with in this book is only farming 10 acres of land. And that was the Henry Brockman, who's raising over 450 different varieties of vegetables on 10 acres of land. So,
yeah.
It varies.
So, and the reason we're losing the people in the middle is because economically they can't make it. So either you got to be huge if you're going to do production agriculture, or you got to do the alternative thing where you can make money by raising a product and doing it on smaller acreage. Because whatever you're doing, you're going to get more for what you're growing.
That's exactly right. you're making more profit per unit rather than less profit on more units. So it's that's the two strategies for making it.
Tell us about, you know, pick, maybe we would want to pick somebody who is in the book and talk in a little bit more detail about them, because we've sort of been talking in generalities, and it might be more useful for people to relate to it if we could just, you know, pick one of the people that's in here.
You want me to pick somebody?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, how about the Dickmans on page 24? They're just up here in Kankakee County. Now, they're a couple. They're an older couple now. But raised a family on the farm, farmed conventionally all their lives until just recently. Now, she's the real people person. She's a real dynamic person, and all she wanted to do was have some chickens on the farm because she remembered how chicken used to taste and told her husband, can't we just have a few chickens on the farm so we can have some chickens?
And she just wanted them for their table.
Yeah.
They weren't planning on raising chickens for sale.
Right. Now they're raising about 4,000 chickens for people, marketing them directly. People drive out to their farm. They also sell sweet corn and eggs, a variety of things. They add something new every time, and they love it. They said, I can't believe we didn't do this years ago. And they were real exciting to talk to. They're raising chickens in what's called a pastured poultry system. The chickens are in a movable cage, and they get moved to fresh grass every day, so they're eating bugs and seeds and grass along with their regular feed. And there's a lot of farmers adopting this, and people who eat this chicken never want to go back to grocery store chicken. It's just such a difference in the texture of the meat and the taste of the meat.
Yeah.
And they just love it. So.
And it's not there's a picture here. It's not exactly like free range. They're not, but it's also not like a cage that's so small they can't hardly turn around. It's
right.
It's almost like a big pen.
Yeah.
That's fenced in, that has chicken wire all around it.
It's a low movable cage, about 10 by 10, and they just move it by hand. They just stick a dolly underneath one end of it and just pull it down to fresh grass every day. And that's a real popular kind of entry point for this kind of alternative enterprise because the demand is so high and they can sell the chicken for so much more than what you get at the grocery store.
Yeah. That's, I think, what's interesting. One of the things that you see when you look at some people in this book is that it seems that they are moving back to a kind of a farm that used to be more typical and now has become less so, as we have seen more and more farms and more big farms, where again they're maybe concentrating on one or two or three crops where everything's planted to that, and probably on most of those farms they don't have any animals, at least not significant numbers of animals, and where it used to be more the case that there were that farmers were growing more different sorts of things. And in addition to maybe having wheat or corn or whatever they were growing, you know, maybe they had some apple trees, maybe they have some grapevines, maybe they were growing some vegetables, maybe they were raising some animals, some that were just for them, but also some that they would be able to sell. They were raising a lot of different stuff, and that's something that we've really gotten away from. Although here now we see people who are very slowly moving back to that kind of style of farm.
Yes, and one of the differences is long ago when farms were so diverse, they were diverse for a very specific reason. We didn't have chemical fertilizers, so we needed manure for that. And then to feed the animals, say horses, who also provided draft power, we needed hay. So we grew all these things, and it was an integrated system. Everything had a purpose, and there was a reason for it. And then they'd sell the excess, of course, off the farm or to neighboring farmers or whatnot. So the purposes are different. I mean, farmers adopt this kind of thing to make money, and it also helps, I think, the ecology of the farm by diversifying. But that's kind of a secondary reason.
Yeah. It seems that there's also maybe I'm wrong about this, but maybe when you have an operation like this, there's greater possibilities for rotation than if – and again, it's this other kind of thinking of that, than if what you're doing is basically raising – hundreds of acres of corn and beans. Yeah, there are some ways I'm sure that you can juggle what you plant. But it seems that in this case, it's maybe easier to do that, or you have greater flexibility or more options in terms of what you plant where.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good thing for a variety of reasons.
Well, and for the organic growers, their certification requires that they have at least a 3 or 4 year rotation. They have to have a longer term rotation. It's just part of the certification requirements. And so cover crops are used. Manure has to be composted and used in a responsible way. And so it just forces them to be more diverse and to use that as cover crops.
For people who have decided they're going to raise animals for meat to sell, and if they're actually processing the meat and selling it themselves, either selling it out their door, or maybe what they're doing is they're going to farmers market and selling it, or other sorts of things. What sort of requirements are there in terms of state licensing and inspection and all that kind of stuff, or are there things that they have to do, hoops that they have to jump through to be able to do that?
Wow, that's a good issue to bring up, because it's not easy. All the state requirements now are geared towards large-scale producers who have to have an inspector in the plant. And, of course, small-scale people can't afford to set up that kind of operation and hire a full-time inspector, and they don't need that. There's one processor in Illinois that does independent-type processing like this, and that's down in Arthur. So many of the people that raise birds, for instance, the free-range chickens, will haul their chickens down there and do that. Now, for super small operations, you can get, I think, an off-farm exemption, but there are hoops to jump through. You really have to pursue that, and the system is just not set up for that. And so really, this is an area where work needs to be done to kind of free up the policies that encourage these kind of operations instead of throwing up barriers to make it harder for these folks to make it.
Yeah. Well, and I guess one concern that I would have, and I think some people would have, on the other hand, you do also want to make sure you adequately protect the health of consumers. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that there are some things that you want to make sure happen, that those people do, so that obviously the quality of the product is good, and we're not going to have any adverse health consequences for people who are going to be eating it.
Absolutely. But the good thing about this system, in a local food system, is that it's kind of built in. I mean, if you're marketing directly to customers, let's say, and somebody gets sick, suddenly, you know, the word gets around. Those people are probably not going to buy from you anymore, and the word gets around, and it's kind of a self-regulating system. Now, you don't want anyone to get sick, so there's got to be some baseline requirements, and nobody wants that to happen, and they're real careful. People buy the stainless steel stuff and are very, very careful. But it's kind of a neat system, kind of built-in regulation system when you have that kind of close contact with your customers. Mm-hmm. And we don't have that with the grocery stores and whatnot. You don't know where your chicken comes from.
That's, I guess that, again, that gets back to one of the things that people are interested in. One of the virtues of this kind of operation is that it is possible. You know, one way or another, there's going to be some accountability. If you knew where you bought it from, if there's some kind of problem, well, then you know who it is that you can
talk to.
And the producer, the same way, has to know that if there is a problem, people are going to come back and they're going to be knocking at their door.
That's right.
And they're going to have to deal with it.
That's right. Also, the environmental problem side of it, if a farmer is farming and selling food to his neighbors, they know who he is, they know how he farms, I think he's going to have a built-in motivation to farm more responsibly, because it's going to affect his neighbors downstream, and they know who he is. And so there's a whole built-in kind of accountability system with a local food system that we have lost completely.
Yeah. We're about at our midpoint here. Questions, comments certainly are welcome. We'll continue to talk with Dan Anderson. He helps coordinate the Agroecology's Sustainable Ag Program at the U of I College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences, and has been interested in following along the whole field of sustainable agriculture for quite a while now, and is the author of this book that we have mentioned. It's titled A Different Field, Innovative Entrepreneurs in Illinois Farming, and it profiles a number of farmers. around the state in a number of different places: Boone County, Christian, Hamilton, Clinton, Iroquois, Woodford, Hancock, Kankakee, Piatt, DeKalb, Madison, and they are doing different kinds of things. Some of them, they're raising animals on grass. They're doing organic vegetable production. There's one guy who's raising catfish, doing some aquaculture. There's somebody else that has some buffalo. And there's a guy who produces honey. Well, I guess the bees produce the honey, and
he collects it.
He collects it, and it is all in this book. And Dan explains in the book that his idea is that he's just hoping that by having people read the stories of these various farmers, they might be inspired and might want to think about trying to do some of these kinds of things. Questions again, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. If people would like to get a copy of a different field,
yeah,
what do they do?
You can order it online at, can I give the website?
Yeah, sure.
www.publicationsplus, that's one word with the P's both capitalized, publicationsplus.uiuc.edu, and it's kind of an online catalog. If you just push browse catalog and then click agriculture from there, it's on the list, and it's $6.50 a copy is all, and that includes shipping.
Okay. And I would assume they're probably at the various extension offices.
We actually, last year is when I wrote the book, and we did it with the idea that we would distribute it at the Farm Progress Show. We had a sustainable ag tent at the Farm Progress Show. So we printed up several thousand copies and were greatly anticipating that, and had one good day at the Farm Progress Show, and then the rest of it was rained out. But the response from the book has been great. People just seem to have really responded to it.
Yeah. Okay. We have a couple callers here. Let's talk with someone in Champaign first. Line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm intrigued about small farming and have long fantasized about that, but you say a lot of people already have a background in farming. If I don't, what can I do to learn the ropes?
Oh, research, decide what you can sell first before you put anything into the ground. Figure out how you're going to sell it.
And, I haven't even bought the ground.
Well, start small. Maybe become a master gardener first. That you can learn a lot through the master gardening program.
Mm-hmm.
Then find some land and start small. I think it's fairly easy matter to get into like a farmer's market, to get a booth at a farmer's market.
Mm-hmm.
But the first step is to figure out how you're going to sell what you're going to sell, and then go from there.
I wonder if it would help to work with someone at the farm market here. Would I gain some skills through that?
Oh, yeah, it would. As a matter of fact, those farmers, they're the hardest working people I've ever met.
Oh, yeah.
And they always have a need for more labor. And if you approach one of them and said, I'd be willing to work for you for free or cheap so I could learn something about farming and how this works, I'm sure you could get on the crew.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. To someone else here. This next caller's line two, and in Urbana. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I was just intrigued a few minutes ago when David mentioned the number of counties that you had found examples of sustainable agriculture, and I was surprised to notice that Champaign County was not one of them. Are there examples of people within our own county who are doing things that you've been talking about throughout the rest of the state?
Yes, there is a family in Champaign County called the Joyas, and they have a farm. What is it called? The Joy of Illinois Farm. I can't remember exactly, but they raise a variety of different products and market directly to people. And they're out in Mahomet, I think. I could get that information for you if you'd like, but there are some. And, hey, this is a great opportunity to mention something called Farm Direct. It's another booklet, if I may, that we've helped put out. It's a directory of local farmers who do this kind of thing and who market their products directly. You can either go out to their farm or find them at farmers markets. You can contact them directly. And if you go to the agroecology website here on campus, www.aces, that's A-C-E-S, .uiuc.edu/ASAP, right on the homepage, you'll see something called Farm Direct. Okay, and if you click on that, you can search the Farm Direct website. Right now, it only covers the east central part of the state. Champaign County is included in that, of course, and we're just about ready to release a statewide version of that. And you can search it by county or by product any way you want and find farmers all over the state.
Oh, thank you very much.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Other questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. One of the things that you're writing about in the book that I think is really interesting is that there seems to be a kind of a burgeoning interest in what has been called agritourism, and that people are, and maybe, again, this goes back to the idea that there are some folks who are interested in knowing where the food they eat comes from and actually having some personal contact with the people who do. Well, there are some operations that are really part of the idea is making it possible for people to come and visit. And to see. And I suppose, you know, people who have wineries have been doing that for a long time, and that that seems to be an area where there might be some growth.
Lots of growth. There's a whole program now devoted to that. There are lots of agritourism sites. And really with the agritourism, the product that they're selling is secondary. They're really trying to sell, many of them, sell an experience. People just seem to love to come out and be in the country and be on a farm, and there's a reindeer ranch just north of here in Rantoul, Hardy's Reindeer Ranch. They have real reindeer there that you can go, and especially at Christmas time, they decorated it all up. The whole thing is to get people out there. They sell Christmas trees. They sell pumpkins in the fall. Look at the reindeer. Go in the gift shop, but it's selling the experience, drawing people out with the experience. Another thing is fee hunting, too. Same thing. I have a friend who has a farm. He has people from all over the East Coast that come out to deer hunt and turkey hunt. Most of them don't even get a deer. But they're there. They see deer walk by, and that's enough, I guess, for them to plump down $1,500 a week to hunt on his place. And so it's selling the experience. It's not necessarily selling a product. That's what the agritourism is about.
Okay. I think we're getting some other folks here who would like to talk. Indiana. We have a caller here in Indiana, line number 4. Hello.
Hello. This may be off the subject a bit, but maybe the person would know the answer. When I first heard what was going to be on the second hour, I first thought of, is there anybody growing bamboo in Illinois? And so my question is more or less on the exotic line. We have a reindeer ranch over here in Indiana that I go by every once in a while. But I remember when I first saw the llamas in my area, it was the middle of the evening, and I drove back and got a flashlight out because I couldn't believe what I'd saw. I thought somewhere along the line I'd lost my mind, but it had a high fence and some other things. But I just wondered in Illinois if there's anybody growing something which we would now consider exotic, but may grow in another temperate zone or another country where it's more common. And the next thing I thought of is, does anybody grow rye in Illinois, for example? I'll hop off.
Okay.
Yeah, there's lots of farmers that grow rye. Rye grows readily here. There's just not much of a market for it. The exotic stuff typically kind of comes and goes. It's popular for a while, and then the market gets quickly flooded, and so it doesn't last very long. Bamboo? I kind of think that there might be some species of bamboo that you could grow here, but I don't know anyone who's growing it commercially at all, and I don't know why they would. Yeah. I don't know where the market would be, but Chicago especially has very large ethnic markets that farmers could serve if they can get into those markets, and there's a real cultural barrier there into getting into those markets. But Arab market, Mexican markets. Those populations up in Chicago are growing, and they like to eat food that they used to eat in the country they came from. And we can raise that food. Goats, a lot of those populations love goat meat, and we can raise goats like crazy here, but doing it and then selling it, making those connections, making those relationships, it's not something you just haul down to the slaughterhouse and say, here's my goats, how much you give me for them. You really have to know the people, and that's what a lot of this is, relationship marketing, getting to know people on a one-to-one basis so that they'll trust you and buy your product.
Yeah. One of the chapters here, there's a fellow in Madison County who is raising something, and I never heard of it. I'm not even sure how to pronounce it.
Canaf?
Canaf, yeah. What is canaf?
Canaf is a fiber crop. Can be used for a variety of things. One of the things they've already developed a process for using it in fiber boards for like door panels in cars, the kind of things in vehicles. It's real lightweight, very strong, mm-hmm. and it's kind of like hemp in a way. It's a fiber crop. And so it's grows well here, and there's a whole group of farmers down there who are growing it. They're learning how to grow it, and they've got a co-op formed, and they're looking for someone who needs it. And they have found people who want it for cheap things like paper and whatnot, but they're looking for a more high-value market for it.
And apparently that some people are thinking this could be, for the state, could be a major crop on the same order of corn and beans?
Well, people have thought that about hemp. Any crop like that is, if the market were there, could become that third crop mm-hmm. for us. But it's just establishing it and building up a market for it.
Let's see. We'll go here next. I think talk to somebody in Bloomington, Indiana. That would be line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to respond with suggestions for the earlier caller who wanted to know or had the aspirations to do the market gardening in the future.
Good.
There's a monthly paper called Acres USA. The library here in Bloomington subscribes to it, and it is an extraordinarily wonderful paper that gives information on agriculture that I've never seen anywhere else. And I'm a product of the Land-Grant College at Purdue, and this is really a breath of fresh air, and very good information on marketing. There's also a newsletter, I believe, that comes out of either Iowa or Kansas. I don't subscribe to it any longer. It's called Growing for Market. And I know that if you go to Google site and just punch in that name, you'll find some information. In regarding to the bamboo, there are many. I've grown bamboo in the past, and I still use it. I harvest the shoots, and of course you can cook those up. But the real value of bamboo is you have a automatic and a perennial supply of staking materials that I use for staking, in this case, bramble fruits, raspberries and blackberries, and I take those to farmers market. Otherwise, they'd all be lying on the ground. And the best source of a extraordinarily good nursery is and your caller would have to figure out a way of schmoozing this deal. It's Klein Nurseries, and they're in Lake County, Ohio. And they are extraordinarily insightful plantsmen, but they're a wholesale operation. But I would certainly give them a call and try and find out what possibilities exist of getting bamboo either from them or from one of their counterparts. If you like, I could give you their 800 number.
Yeah, I guess you could do that. I don't know if the caller was really interested in it. I think he was just curious about whether or not it grew. I don't know. He was thinking about growing it himself. I know that my neighbors in Urbana have some growing ornamentally in their backyard. And I was really surprised one day, and I was talking with them over the back fence, and I was looking at it, and I said, is this bamboo? And they said, yeah, it is. And it does grow successfully, and I guess must have overwintered, so it's a perennial in their backyard.
Yeah.
It's definitely a Zone 5 plant, and the real differentiation one needs to make is growing clump bamboo or running bamboo. And if you grow the clump, it's a mild-mannered plant. It's not invasive. If it's the runner, it's a takeoff artist. And you may be a little chagrined after you find that you're really running after it and trying to contain it.
Yeah.
David, you had a guest that spoke approximately 6 weeks ago from California on permaculture.
Yeah, there's David Bloom.
Okay. Yep. Okay, David, if David Bloom came to Bloomington as well, and he is with a group of pontificators somewhere between Champaign and Chicago for doing some workshop, and they're going to have a free day, a soiree of speakers. And it seems to me if you could help, well, I'm not sure how you could facilitate this, but his operation had emailed me, and I'm assuming that they would be willing to email anyone else the dates of their get-together. And I'm thinking for the lady who is interested in doing this, growing and marketing, this would be a priceless opportunity to hear, you know, for free on this one day what these people have to say about permaculture, which in a sense, I think, dovetails with your speaker's discussion today. So that's all I have to say, and thank you very much.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call.
Yeah, it does indeed. In fact, that day, that permaculture day, they're bringing a man named Joel Salatin here, and he is an incredible person, and your listener would learn a lot from him. He's the one that kind of invented the pasture poultry movable cage system, and does a phenomenal number of things.
Well, do you know how people could get more information about that?
Our website that I gave earlier, the ASAP website, has information on that event on it. And if they just want to contact me through that website, I'd be happy to get information.
Okay, and your email is on there. I'm looking at it now. So this is what we're talking about here is the website of the Agroecology Sustainable Ag Program. And again, that's you can go to here. It's aces.uiuc.edu/ASAP. And there you can browse the Farm Direct guide that Dan was talking about. You can also see some information on the book that we were talking about, A Different Field, and also about some of the activities they got going there.
Yeah.
So if you have internet access, you go there and it you can get all that information.
Or if you don't have internet access, my number is 217-333-1588.
Okay. And we have about 10 minutes left, maybe a little bit less, this part of Focus 580 with Dan Anderson, who, among other things, helps to coordinate the Agroecology Sustainable Agriculture Program that is in the U of I College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. And again, more information available on their website.
And I might add, I'm in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences. My boss wanted me to make sure.
Oh, absolutely. We want to make sure all credit is goes to all departments. Let's talk with some other folks here. And let me see. I think we're going to talk with somebody next. Line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I appreciate the program indeed. The joy of farm for the lady who was interested in something locally, if she takes Bradley west to County Road 400, she'll see the joy of sign on her left-hand side. The person interested in doing something with bamboo, there are flooring manufacturers who laminate bamboo into beautiful flooring. I don't know how to contact those, unfortunately. And for you, Dr. Anderson, or if it is Doctor, I think the Farm Bureau, the State Farm Bureau, needs to have a sustainable small-scale agricultural perspective. Most of their stuff is their lobbying power is directed at larger-scale farming. But they need to have a niche for this, and perhaps you could talk to the local Farm Bureau committees and things of that sort. Another group that you need to talk to locally is the environmental and land use people at the county level. That committee frequently makes decisions about agriculture, and they don't view small plots of land to be amenable to agriculture any longer, and they're more willing to change zoning or allow zoning variances for small parcels. And they need to have a perspective that, indeed, there is some kind of farming that can use 35 acres or even less.
That's a great point. No, it isn't, Dr. Anderson. I don't have a PhD.
Honorary PhD there.
Well, you can be, and I'll let you be.
Thanks. But your comment about Farm Bureau is interesting because I have had several conversations lately, more than one, with our local Champaign County Farm Bureau, and talking about these issues, and I think could be a real help to them. I was in one meeting where the main topic was the image of farmers to the non-farm community and how they struggle with this. Mm. I said, this could be the solution to your problem. If you support small farmers like this, they like to be close to urban centers. They're going to have more direct positive contact with those people, and they could act as a buffer with your big grain farmers who can then also benefit from that positive PR indirectly. And so I am talking about these things with Farm Bureau. You're absolutely right, and they seem open to the ideas.
And at the state level, you need to talk with them so that their lobbying efforts include the small scale or the alternative farm then too. Thank you very much for the program.
All right. Thank you for the call. Let's see if we can get maybe one more at least. We'll go to a caller in Champaign and line 3. Hello. Caller there on line 3 in Champaign?
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
I was wondering if I was thinking about trying to find meat that is not kind of in the general, goes around from all over the country and might have this mad cow disease. Mm. And I know people raise beef locally, and maybe they don't, you know, it's all internal. And I was thinking of trying to buy it that way, and then it would maybe be organic as well. I don't know. But
sure.
Do you know how I could try and find somebody that is thinking about the safety of
yep,
beef?
That's easy. Did you hear me refer to the Farm Directory earlier? And there are meat producers in there who they raise grass-fed beef and other animals. That is what you're going to look for, grass-fed and organically raised beef. And you can buy it directly from those producers. And you can talk to them directly and ask them all the questions you want to about how they raise their beef. And that would be the way to go.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And I'm just here now looking at the Farm Direct guide for Champaign County, what we talked about, that you can get at through the ACES website. And there are a list of 26 different producers here and people who raise meat and who have produce honey and who grow fruit and who have produce, and the Joyas are there, their farm, Joy of Illinois Farm. There's a guy here I happen to be acquainted with, a fellow by the name of John Chernus, mm-hmm. who has the Blue Moon Farm where he grows organic produce. So for that person who asked that first question about why there are no people in Champaign County in the book, and are there, yes, there are. There are a whole number of them. So if folks are interested in finding out. If you have the internet, you can do that. Now, this does also exist in a printed form, too.
Yes, it does, and there should be a way to order it there online if you need it, contact information, and that can be sent to you. But wait, just within a couple weeks, we're going to have the statewide version, updated version, and so hopefully it's going to be an annually updated publication.
Yeah. Well, we're kind of coming down to the point where we're going to have to finish up. We're looking at a trend here that we're just going to see grow more and more?
I do. I think it is, and part of the reason is what that lady brought up, the last caller. The mad cow is just one thing, even though there's only been one case of it here. Look what it did in Europe to the way people looked at their food. We assume that the government is watching over our food, and I think for the most part they are, but there are gaps in the system. And people are more and more going to be willing to pay a little more to know where their food comes from. And so I think this is going to continue to grow.
Well, I appreciate very much you giving us some of your time. And again, now for people, if you do have access to the Internet, you can go to the website of the Agroecology Sustainable Agriculture Program. So that's ACES, A-C-E-S, .uiuc.edu/ASAP. And there you can look at the direct farm guide. So if you're interested in looking for producers near you, if you're interested in finding out more, taking a look at this book we've talked about that Dan has done, profiling some innovative entrepreneurs in farming, a different field, you can look at that there and find out about some of the other things that the program is involved in. And then the publication we've talked about certainly should be available. If people will get with their local extension, cooperative extension person, they should certainly be able to provide them.
It's also going to be available in all the libraries across the state, too, the new Farm Direct.
So. All right. And when do you think that's going to?
Within the next 2 to 3 weeks.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
It's great.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Community Blood Services of Illinois, the nonprofit agency providing all donated blood for patients in Champaign-Urbana, Charleston, Mattoon, Danville, and Effingham. Donation information at 367-2202 or on the web at bloodservices.org. Blood donation, it's about life. Programs also made possible by a grant from Christopher's Fine Jewelry Design, a gallery of imaginative jewelry and gifts in downtown Champaign, offering one-of-a-kind custom design gemstone roundtables and conflict-free diamonds direct from Canada. This is the very first day of our fiscal year, and we would like to say thanks to everyone who contributed to WILL over the past year. It is your support that allows us to provide the programs and services that you have come to expect. In just a week or two, we should have an official count on our fundraising effort for last year. We will definitely report back to you on how close we came to meeting our listener support goal. In the meantime, though, we hope that you will enjoy the next year of programming that your support is making possible. And once again, we want to give you our thanks. Well, that's about it for us here on Focus 580. We hope, though, that you will stay tuned because coming up in the next couple of hours, we have this program called The Afternoon Magazine, and there'll be news and sports and weather and other things. And Celeste Quinn is the host.
Thank you, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of The Afternoon Magazine, we'll take a look at the global AIDS crisis and the response of the U.S. to the pandemic. Our guest will be Greg Berman, the author of The Invisible People. Let's turn our attention now to what's happening on the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange. July wheat trading at 333, down 5. September, 341.5, down 4. July corn, 254.75, down 2.75. September corn, 259.75, down 2.75. December, 263.75, down 3.25. March, 270.75, down 3. July beans, 914, up 21. August soybeans, 796, up 13.5. November, 661.5.